I agreed to volunteer for this farm. And what ended up happening was they were like, hey, you're a starving artist. It looks like you could use it. You should bring some of this food home and like eat. And so I started bringing home this food I was growing, and my eating habits changed almost overnight. And for me, the big transformative piece was it made me feel better, like physically and mentally.
Amazing,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, weird how the things you put in your body affect how you feel. Crazy. But we eat such trash food in America a lot of the time that I think we forget that. We just get so used to the convenience, and you know, our eating styles can get really, really counter to that.
This episode of The Sponge Show is produced and distributed by Be Connected, a social media management firm in Northeast Wisconsin. Welcome, everybody, back to The Sponge Show. If you are a follower of this podcast, you might realize that I have taken a bit of a hiatus from doing this show for about 3.5 years. The last episode that we did was right before COVID, and then the world changed. So I'm excited to dive back in. What is The Sponge Show, you might wonder, or you might ask? This is a show where we dive into absorbing stories, lessons, life, business, community, everything like that. A little story about myself. My name is Brad, and I started a company called Be Connected about 12 and a half years ago. And when I started the company, I talked a lot, and I needed a reminder for how to shut up and how to absorb and learn from people that were around me. So I carried a little sponge in my car. So I would like go into a networking event and I would squeeze it. And that would remind me to like just soak in everything else, whether it's an electrician or a plumber or a startup or a big corporation or something like that, that you can just like sit back and just learn.
I never knew that.
Yeah. As opposed to just like, you know, talking and trying to prove yourself all the time. So anyways, thus we have The Sponge Show. And I'm really excited to come back after this little break that we've had. Life has been crazy in the best way. In the craziest way, roller coaster, you name it, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate. And I am really fortunate to be able to bring my friend Alex to the show. Do you want to introduce yourself and who you are and who you're with and everything like that?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Alex Tank. I'm the CEO of Fork Farms, which is a indoor agriculture technology company where we basically make and manufacture these really energy efficient ways to grow food indoors. No sunlight, no soil. We feed a lot of schools, hospitals, food and beverage, corporate, kind of anybody who cares about fresh food and wants it more affordable and higher quality, basically.
That's awesome. And one of the reasons why I wanted to invite you to be the guest to kick this off again after taking a bit of a break was that I've had the privilege to work with some organizations that you've been involved with along the way. So I guess that's a really good segue in about like the origin story of Fork Farms. So I met you with Goodwill.
Yep.
So walk us through a little bit about like how Fork Farms came to be and then where that leads you to now.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it must have been 10 years ago now, I think, when we met.
It would have been
2013, 14.
It would have been
like
right
that.
When you were starting.
Yeah, right when we were getting going. Yeah, so the genesis for the idea came in Brooklyn. I was living out there trying to be an opera singer, and was like fine at it, I guess, but hard to pay the bills being an opera singer. I don't know if you would have guessed that, but it's
can't say I've ever done it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, most people haven't. And so that was a challenge. And I had always been into plants and biology and things like that. And randomly met a guy who was growing food on a rooftop. And he invited me there. And it was just like this nice spot. And I honestly just needed a way to get outside during the summer. And so I agreed to volunteer for this farm. And what ended up happening was they were like, hey, you're a starving artist. It looks like you could use it. You should bring some of this food home and like eat. And so I started bringing home this food I was growing, and my eating habits changed almost overnight. And for me, the big transformative piece was it made me feel better, like physically and mentally.
Amazing,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, weird how the things you put in your body affect how you feel. Crazy. But we eat such trash food in America a lot of the time that I think we forget that. We just get so used to the convenience, and you know, our eating styles can get really really counter to that. And so I thought to myself, my God, is it really that simple? Like, you grow food and then you're more likely to eat it, and then you eat it and you feel better. Like, maybe we've been overcomplicating things a little bit with like all these fad diets and, you know, everything else that we hear about. So anyway, to make a long story short, I realized you cannot start a business like this in New York City because cost of living is outrageous. So mm-hmm. I had to come back home to Wisconsin. And moved into my parents' basement and was going to put in an offer on a piece of property in Madison. I thought, perfect market for this, to be slinging lettuce out the back door. I thought I was going to be an indoor farmer.
Slinging lettuce.
Right? Yeah. And I got offered a job for Goodwill Industries, where I met you, on the same day. And so I decided to take the job because, like you with your sponge story, I was like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And I need to learn. I was terrified I was going to blow like the very small amount of savings I had on this business, and I just didn't have the confidence. And they were hiring all these ex-Fortune 500 executives there, where you could like learn from people that had done it. I almost got a tattoo in those years, actually, that was like, listen more, talk less.
Yeah.
Like, I vibe with the sponge story so much. Like, I had to go through that too. Those were those years for sure. And then I went to Feeding America and learned how the hunger relief system works and how food moves around. And then realized that there really just isn't an ideal home for our technology. You know, I at the time thought I'd either give it away to Goodwill or give it away to Feeding America, but there's so much more applications for it beyond that, and decided to start the business, and that was late 2016.
And for those listeners and the audience out there, can you give them a little bit of a 5-second tour of starting it on your own to, like, you've got a pretty good size team now,
yeah,
and pretty good size scale as far as the spread of your technology, your growing systems, like, around the country. So, like, yeah, how much have you grown in what span of time?
So we've been in business 6 years, and the company's got almost 40 people on the team, and we're in all 50 states and 11 countries. I think there's almost 3,000 indoor farms that we have kind of in our network. Some are small, you know, some are very big. And it just kind of depends on what folks are trying to do.
And for those that are watching on video, I'm going to put some pictures of like what a growing system looks like and things like that. But for the listeners out there, can you describe, it's like vertical indoor farming,
right? Yep.
Hydroponics.
Yep.
Right. So
imagine, like an R2-D2 looking thing, but that's about 5.5 feet tall.
Without the beeps.
And it opens like a clamshell kind of, so you can open it like a door. It's about the size of an apartment refrigerator, I think that size. And it holds 288 plant spaces. There's a light in the middle, and the plants kind of grow around the light, pointed towards the light. And doing it that way, we figured out how to recapture the light energy inside of it. And so the
opposed to what being lost to other angles and stuff,
the ether. Yeah. Like most folks, they, you know, the lights grow kind of out of a post, and then, you know, you kind of light it, but then there's no way to recapture it, or that you grow in like vertical tiers, like, I think like shelves type approach,
or horizontally, right?
Or horizontally. Yeah. And we just figured out, no one else had done it before, believe it or not, where if you use like white colored panels, and if you optimize the distance between the plant and the light and you enclose that in the right way, you can optimize that recapture. And so industry standards, like 18 kilowatts per pound for your nerd listeners. and our average customer does it for 4.6. So it's like a third of the energy consumption compared to like the industry standard, even at scale. So we can basically say you can grow food for like $1 a pound. And it's like high quality farmers market quality organic.
And when you're talking about pounds,
yeah,
lettuce goes a long way.
Yeah.
I mean, among other things, I know that,
you've seen like a pound of lettuce is like, you know, it'll
feed you. But you have a lot of leafy stuff. It's not just lettuce, right? It's all different types of vegetation and stuff like that.
Totally.
But poundage goes really far.
Yeah. Yeah. Each one of these produces about a pound a day is what it kicks out. So whether that be herbs or leafy greens or strawberries. Yeah. A lot of basil. If you ever need basil, just call me. I've got like a whole, my freezer is just basil.
You know, it's good for pesto, though. It kind of cooks down a lot. And you don't get a whole lot out of a big bushel of basil.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got 40 people. You got 3,000 different systems for indoor farms, growing systems, whatever you want to call them. Where do you see, like, your market fit? Is it where you're working with other organizations to, like, have them cultivate at mass for like their whole corporation or for communities? Mm-hmm. You mentioned food or you mentioned schools before. You mentioned companies or things like that that are introducing it to their companies, as opposed to say direct to consumer, where people want to just like grow in their basement or something like that.
Yeah, totally. Well, we've done all of that, but some of it we've been really intentional about, and some of it just kind of came to us. Frankly, we learned around 2019. That we need to put down, I hate this analogy, but you put down a shotgun, you pick up a sniper rifle, you know, kind of approach where, I don't know what a better analogy would be, but.
Yeah. I mean, instead of throwing spaghetti at the wall, you're like, you're going to go for the best noodle.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, there's a lot of flavor in that meatball, but if you throw spaghetti at the wall, it's a lot of splatter.
Okay,
right?
I'm gonna do that from now. That's way better.
I just made that up. I don't
you know, go with it. We were like, we had a bunch of success in healthcare and with schools and with hunger relief, and you know, all these different groups loved it, but we weren't getting really good at any one thing. And so we chose to just go after K-12. We feel like we can make the most impact there. It's a great, like, I don't know if you know this, but school districts are usually the largest, restaurant in most communities, right?
So that makes sense.
They serve the most meals, of any other organization in almost every community.
Hundreds or thousands a day.
Yeah.
I mean, in a given location,
millions a year. Right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, if we're going to create an impact on the food system, great place to start. What we didn't know is over time, is the business going to lean more business to business, or is it going to lean more consumer, to your point? And it definitely has gone more business to business. There's a lot of folks out there that are doing, you know, little tabletop hydroponic systems, or, you know, a small unit that's got like 32, 35 plant spaces in it. That's like, it's perfect for a home user, a hobbyist. You know, you're not really looking to feed anybody, but you're just trying to grow some plants.
Good for the herbs.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for the herbs. Yeah. And that's not us, right? Like, but we're also not like building a 100,000 square foot indoor farm that's got robots running it and stuff like that. Like, what we realize is that there's this huge middle of people who love good food, who love watching plants grow, and really care about feeding their community, whatever that means to them. So for some people, their community is their school or your team at your company, or whatever it is. And this institutional scale farming was kind of a novel idea. And so our business is now really on a mission to decentralize food production and make it where, like, all right, if your school buys X amount of, let's say, salad greens every year, we'll make it where you never have to buy that product ever again, right? We're not going to supplant your entire food supply chain, but we can make a real dent in this thing that's, like, super nutrient dense and highly perishable and usually pretty low quality and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and a lot of times those institutions are probably getting this produce from a distributor that's getting it from somewhere else, and there's all these steps in that process. So
handled a lot. It's like
you don't know where it's coming from, the quality of it, all that sort of thing. Not to mention every time there's a step in the process, there's added on price
and risk
and risk. Yeah,
and food safety risk, all that too. Absolutely. I mean, how many times have you gone to the grocery store and you pick up like a, you know, a pre-mixed clamshell of greens and you bring it home and like there's already like moldy gross inside of it, and you're paying like, if you do the math, you're paying like $12 a pound for that food. It's nuts. Yeah. And it's like you don't even really want to eat it even right after.
Not exactly fresh.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think that's acceptable.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And I'll tell you a little story. We didn't talk about this before we started recording, but I think it's a really cool thing. So you talked about K-12. So K-12 is as a lot of people probably realize, is that it's the whole range of the economy. You've got very low income families that struggle to put food on the table. You've got very high income private schools, all that sort of thing. So everybody eats, but your heart goes out to the people that, like, kids that can't afford it, or families that can't afford it. So, I was doing some work. I don't remember the entire scope of it, but I got a tour. I was taking a tour of the St. Joseph's food pantry.
Yeah.
And they were walking me through all of these lunches that go out to all the schools in the area to make sure that all of the families can get the food that they need while going to school, at least the lunches and maybe breakfast and things like that. And the food, or the schools, are the ones that get them those meals. So I'm taking this tour, and as we're walking around, they show us, like, oh, we do thousands of meals a week.
Oh, yeah.
And as we're walking around, you take a look, and you go to the left, and there's six different growing systems from Fork Farms that are in there.
Yep.
And that stuff is then good quality produce that is then going into these lunches, which is then going into the hands of the kids.
Yeah. That's, and like, a perfect example.
Yeah. So even when you're working with, like, a food pantry, you're still impacting the quality of the food that is in the community through the schools, K-12.
Right.
Even if you're not, like, on site at the school.
Right.
And I don't know. I thought that was, like, the coolest thing.
I do too. I mean, and they were, like, an early adopter. Like, they started with us really, really early. Like, they took a chance on us, frankly. And we've tried really hard over the years to, like, really take good care of those partners that were with us from the beginning. But there's a lot of food pantries that have followed suit, right? I mean, now you think about the impact that St. Joseph's food program in Appleton or Menasha made on a group in Kansas City, you know, or a group in New Jersey. And I mean, that's what's been really cool about this, is that right here in Appleton, there's people who are, like, really making this scaled national impact now, and they don't even really know it. But it's cool for me to see.
So I'm guessing through, you know, things like, you know, business incubators, Titletown Tech, all that kind of thing, you've had opportunities to give advice to up and coming cohorts, to up and coming people that have, you know,
I try not to. I
know. Well, I'm gonna put you on the spot now.
Okay, fair.
So, when it comes to, like, the mission of Fork Farms and what you've learned, both from, like, the tying in with nonprofits, but then also going off on your own, partnering with businesses versus consumer, all that sort of thing, what do you think has been key along the way of going, you know, getting the momentum that you have now and making the impact with the communities and the food and the quality and all that kind of stuff that you're seeing now?
That's a good question. I mean, my experience, at least, like, you know, I can't speak for everybody, but early on, we knew we had something with the product. Like, we knew there was some initial interest there, but you never really know what your product market fit is until you really go out and start doing it.
Oh, for sure.
You have to take that terrifying leap in order to really know. And so we chose to kind of start small and methodically, and to really just go one partner at a time. And each time we did an installation, we learned and we iterated on the product. And we did that for, I would say, at least 18 months before we really started to think about scaling the business a different way. And, you know, I still had a day job at the time, so I was de-risked a little bit. I had taken other people's money, so you definitely want to make sure you get it right. But I think that was really key for us, is, like, knowing that we're not going to really mess up the brand before we even have a brand, you know, by giving somebody a product that doesn't work right or doesn't live up to the promise or something like that. And it really taught us a lot about how they're using it and why they're using it and how we sell it and how we support it on the back end and really make it the best experience it can be. From there, I don't know, one of my mantras is it's a game of inches. You know, I think so often you try to swing for the fence, and so often you think too big for too long. And I think that gets in your way. And I think at the end of the day, the discipline to just get heads down and do the work that day is the challenge for a lot of people.
But so you can take away a couple of things that you said. First of all, don't think, like, this is how, if I have an idea for a product or something to bring to the market, don't just assume I'm going to make this thing. I'm going to bring it to life. And then people are going to want it.
Yeah, and then it's going to work.
Yeah, like magic, because it's a great idea, right? It's a great idea, so people are going to want it.
Of course.
It's ultimately like testing, learning, adapting, listening to the customers.
Right.
Figuring out, you know, how they're using it, why they're using it, what gap are you filling. It's not just like, no, this is what I want to do, so I'm going to do this, and then it's going to work.
Right.
It's not that simple.
Yeah, I mean, this is a cliche example, but you think about Amazon. You know, everyone was like, oh, that's just going to be a online book.
A bookstore.
Bookstore. Yeah. 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 Look who's laughing now, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And then... I don't know where I was going with that.
I don't know. I mean, how would you answer your own question?
How would I answer my own question? Honestly, so very similar. So I went to school for entrepreneurial management, and part of that is learning how to do a business plan. I threw the business plan out in the first 3 months of starting the business because I knew that there was a gap and I knew there was a need for the services that we provide. But once I started getting out there and doing the work, then you start realizing like, oh, my main customers are not who I thought they were going to be. The quality versus quantity isn't what I thought it was going to be. The skill sets that are needed to do this really well aren't what I thought it's going to be. So like you learn, they don't teach you that kind of stuff in school. they don't teach you like, yeah, they can teach you about, you know, market research and doing all that sort of thing. But there are so much that you learn, you know, cliche school of hard knocks. Like there's so much that you learn just by doing it. And as long as you don't do it with blinders on that are like, I'm doing this because I want to do it.
Yeah.
No, I'm doing this because it solves a need.
Yeah.
And there's a mission here.
That's right.
And if you focus on that, then it just comes down to like, how do you solve that need?
Yes. I completely agree. Somebody told me when I was first starting the business that if you keep your intentions pure, good things happen. And for us, at least, every time we focus on how do we hit the next revenue target? How do you, you know, grow the business by X percent? Not that those things are unimportant, but when we obsess over them, things slow down. When we obsess over, like, how do we feed more kids? How do we take really good care of these teachers? How do we, you know, increase access in this food desert? That's when the magic happens, and that's when the energy gets spun up, and that's when it comes to life, and we move faster as a business as a result. So I agree with you.
Yeah. So with where you're at now, have you reached a point where you can think ahead future-wise of like where is the industry, the community, where are things going, bigger picture? Sometimes that's really tough to see if you're in growth mode.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, I mean, if you just use numbers, like let's say I'm going after 5% market share. If you go after 5% market share, you could be going up to that. But that doesn't mean that you know how the 100% of the market is shifting or moving like that. So are you at a point now where you can say like, I think that things are shifting in this way, or I think there's going to be a need for this, or I can see us growing here more? Or are you still in like growth mode just trying to impact as many communities as you can?
It's a little bit of both. It's gotten a lot different in this regard. I think when we were first getting started, it was, how do we get through this week? You know, we bootstrapped our business for most of its history, and I undercapitalized the business significantly to start out. And so, I mean, it was a lot of like, we're going to take a couple of our own systems and inventory and put them into production so we can sling lettuce out the back door just to keep the heat going. Right.
Yeah. If you ever come up with like a bio, like a documentary style or like a book, that's like a biography of the company.
Yeah.
I hope you call it Sling and Lettuce.
There's like a lot of connotations to that.
You just got a picture of you just like frisbee and lettuce,
like, like throwing cards. So now I would say we're thinking more in like 2-year timelines, right? So I can see out the next 2 years, and you know, we're able to predict it with a relative amount of predictability based on what we're trying to do and what we think we can do and where the markets are. And I would say going into next year, we're definitely at a point where we can start to take the lessons and how we built a really great K through 12 program and start to expand then into other verticals, right? So we can think similarly around, okay, this is what it required to get excellent here. How do we build excellence in healthcare? How do we build excellence in hospitality, food and beverage, things like that? So we're going to begin that work, which I'm really excited about because I know the applications are numerous. Everybody eats, right?
Yep.
But, you know, if I think about even more macro than that, it's hard. I mean, there is a lot of uncertainty in the economy today, right? I mean, you think about the geopolitical stuff with the war in Ukraine and Israel, Gaza, and all that stuff, a lot of uncertainty there. The inflation we had this year, interest rate concerns, and then all the lagging post-pandemic supply chain stuff. I mean, it's been a hard year. Startups community in general, is in a bit of a bloodbath. I mean, it's really hard to raise money. It's really hard to get investment, and a lot of companies are bleeding in a really sad way right now. You know,
I think the good thing about your product is that when times are good, mm-hmm. people can put investment into this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And when supply chain hurts for food wise, when mm-hmm. inflation hurts food wise, mm-hmm. that puts your product in a very good light.
Well, you knew exactly where I was going. You know, there's some of the unfortunate headwinds that we all face that end up being tailwinds for our business. Just because you mentioned half of them, climate change is another one, you know, as they till under more and more produce in Salinas Valley and Yuma, which is where the majority of the American, you know, specialty produce supply comes from. It only increases pricing further. It disrupts those supply chains further. I mean, and then you layer in food safety concerns. I mean, we deregulated water quality standards. And so now we've seen increases in Listeria, E. coli outbreaks, things like that. The schools get scared. They're like, we need to take care of our kids. And if you grow it yourself, it just takes so much of that risk out. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think green tech, clean tech, as a vertical is going to do extremely well over the next 10 years. You have to be thinking long about it, but I see it as an inevitability personally. The world has to move to more clean energy. It has to move to, you know, more sustainable solutions. I think decentralization of manufacturing and inshoring of manufacturing again and some of that, I think it's inevitable. And it's just because it's a byproduct of, you know, so many of these constraints that the world has that it didn't necessarily have 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I'm proud of you, man. I think it's awesome to watch. Thanks. Like
you've seen it from the very beginning.
Yeah. So, I think it's really, really cool. And I'm really excited to see where things go over the next few years.
Yeah.
Take a minute to like soak it all in every once in a while. I know work can be stressful and all
you
that
know
sort
how
of thing.
Hard that is too. Yeah.
So. Yeah. But sometimes you got to realize like, look at how far you've come. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah.